106.6.
That was Whitesnake with Still of the Night. I'm Dom Robinson, and you're listening to the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson, on North Manchester FM 106.6. It's a weekly show where I look through the week's releases in movies and video games, plus the charts, a look at what's new on TV, and if you're good, I'll give you a bit of news as well. DVDfever.co.uk is a non-profit website and really deserves your attention, so go have a look now. Well, in a bit. If you have anything else, anything to say about anything you hear on the show, do get in touch via the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVDfevershow. I'm coughing already. Summer cold's coming. Anyway, what do we have in the first hour? It's all about films, and we start off with John Carter taking a trip to Mars at the cinema. Then we have the top 10 movie charts. Then we have the look at the new cinema releases out this Friday, including Wrath of the Titans and Titanic 3D. I also have a look at the new DVD and Blu-ray releases, including Puss in Boots and the remake of The Thing. Now, starting off with John Carter, prior to seeing John Carter, I knew precious little about it. It wasn't until seeing Mark Kermode's review on BBC News that I realised it was originally entitled John Carter of Mars, and that a focus group was put together who decided that the Of Mars part should be dropped from the film's promotion. Comparisons were also made with Star Wars in the promotion, so at the time of watching the film, I didn't realise that Mr. Carter predated George Lucas's story, and by almost 60 years, having first made an appearance in a magazine serial in 1912. So what's the plot? Well, I figured I'd only write a review once I tried to put it all together in my mind, but then I just gave up that thought, as the plot seemed all over the place. For reasons that will not particularly become apparent, Captain John Carter, Taylor Kitsch, gets teleported at random from the 19th century Civil War to Mars, even though he doesn't quite realise he's now on a different planet, despite there being a distinct lack of gravity. He encounters Jar Jar Binks, Tars Tarkas, Willem Dafoe, a weird creature who ends up basically leading him into a civil war of their own, where a battle is raging between various people, including Tars and Princess Deja Thoris of Helium, played by Lynn Collins. And so it goes on from there. I didn't really follow which character was which, not even realising that there were famous names behind some of the characters, as I just didn't detect their intonation. And I just thought, for example, ah, there goes Kieran Hines, or there goes, oh, who's that bloke? I think he's playing Caesar. No, he can't be, but oh, he looks like him. It turned out to be James Purefoy. Several times we saw Dominic West and Mark Strong hamming it up as the bad guys, which was amusing in part, but you know, they know they're best than this. All in all, John Carter of Mars was one of the maddest films I've ever seen. It just seemed to make it up as it all went along, and just wasn't particularly very good, with no one particularly pushing the boat out in the acting stakes. But still, it's nice to see a film shot in anamorphic Panavision, as so few are made in this way these days. The majority of CinemaScope films are made in Super 35, which, well, I say CinemaScope, I know CinemaScope is a term. I say CinemaScope in sort of quotes, because I mean sort of like a very wide image on the screen. CinemaScope was quite a famous, you know, brand name for it before. But a lot of the films in this width are made in Super 35, which, to simplify things, looks like a 16:9 production, which has just had black bars stuck on at the top and bottom. So there's just no sense of purpose in making it that way. Filming in Panavision gives it a certain sense of style, usually with a slightly convex look to the landscape. The only other recent film I've seen which springs to mind and which uses this is We Need to Talk About Kevin, which is well worth seeing. So, John Carter, you know, I mean, I knew very little about this before I saw it, and all I thought was that's the name of Noah Wyle's character in ER. But he wasn't in the film at all, sadly. He was a pretty decent actor. He doesn't seem to have done a great deal since leaving ER, well, since ER left him, because ER came to a halt. So, I also saw this in 2D, partly as it was more convenient in terms of the time it was being shown, but also because, as was confirmed by Mr. Kermode, it was filmed that way and post-produced into 3D, apparently very badly. It did look, you know, very well composed in 2D, though, you know, as well, with nothing shooting in or out of the screen. So, in my view, there's no need for any 3D conversion at all. So, overall, I'm going to give this one a 4 out of 10. It was nice to see something shot in Panavision, because it just does make a bit of a change these days. Just shows a little bit of thought has got into it. But there are better films to go and see that do sort of. I mean, I'm not really a massive superhero fan anyway, but there are better sort of superhero type films, you know, that you can go and see. So, oh, it's also on track to be one of the biggest flops of all time, apparently. It's cost about $250 million to make, and another 100 million or so in marketing. So, well, probably a lot of that spent on the focus group. So, yeah, it may make it back. I don't know. Probably not. But you can be rest assured, we will not see a sequel. Okay, so I'd say 4 out of 10 for that one. And we'll have a bit of music, and then we're going to have the top 10 movie charts this week. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show with me, Don Robinson. And in this section, we have a look through the top 10 movie charts. And as I've said before, I always go through the US movie charts here because basically I find them, you know, a lot more interesting, especially as in a lot of cases you find out it's about some of the films that are coming out soon in the UK. We start off with, well, the number one film that's out over here already, which is 21 Jump Street, which took $36.3 million in its opening weekend. It features two underachieving police officers who go undercover in a high school in order to bust a drugs ring. With the tagline, "The only thing getting blown tonight is their cover," the film stars current hot properties Jonah Hill from The Sitter and Moneyball, and also Channing Tatum from Haywire and The Vow. And the trailer for this has a lot of good laughs in it, so it certainly does look well worth a watch. Number two, we have Dr. Seuss's The Lorax. In this film, a 12-year-old boy searches for the one thing that will enable him to win the affection of the girl of his dreams. To find it, he must discover the story of the Lorax, a grumpy yet charming creature who fights to protect his world. Starring Danny DeVito as the Lorax, plus Ed Helms, Zac Efron, Taylor Swift, and Betty White. There's no doubt there's a lot of great animation in here, but as anyone anyone will know who listens to this show a lot, there must be some of you out there, CGI animation films really just don't do it for me. So I'm going to be giving this one a miss. At number three, we've got John Carter. I mentioned that already, so you know I'm not going to cover that base again. What I will say is though, all the trailers for everything you hear about on the show today are on the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/DVDFeverShow. Number four, we've got Project X. Now, I mentioned this several times, and it's still just hanging on in there, you know. I mean, the trailer makes it just look like there's a really complex plot going on, whereas it just when you watch the trailer, it just basically just feels like a typical stoner movie. Now, the film was cast through a nationwide open casting call to find people who'd never acted before or who had limited acting experience. The majority of the cast were sourced from the casting call, but a few with prior acting credits, such as Thomas Mann, were accepted after multiple auditions. Filming took place on sets entirely in Los Angeles, California, over 5 weeks on a $12 million budget. And the movie is presented as a home video from the perspective of an attendee using a camera to document the night's events. But, as I've said, you know, it still looks completely pants. What looks a lot better is a film which is out here now, which is called Act of Valor at number five. And an unprecedented blend of real-life heroism and original filmmaking, Act of Valor stars a group of active-duty Navy SEALs in a powerful story of contemporary global anti-terrorism. Inspired by true events, the film combines stunning combat sequences, up-to-the-minute battlefield technology, and heart-pumping emotion for the ultimate action adventure. Act of Valor takes audiences deep into the secretive world of the most elite, highly trained group of warriors in the modern world. When the rescue of a kidnapped CIA operative leads to the discovery of a deadly terrorist plot against the US, a team of SEALs is dispatched on a worldwide manhunt. As the valiant men of Bandito Platoon race to stop a coordinated attack that could kill and wound thousands of American civilians, they must balance their commitment to country, team, and their families back home. Each time they accomplish their mission, a new piece of intelligence reveals another shocking twist to the deadly terror plot, which stretches from Chechnya to the Philippines and from Ukraine to Somalia. The widening operation sends the SEALs across the globe as they track the terrorist ring to the US-Mexico border, where they engage in an epic firefight with an outcome that has potentially unimaginable consequences for the future of America. Now, as I said, there's no one famous in this because all the cast are portrayed by active duty US Navy SEALs. And while the missions are fictitious, the weapons and the tactics are real. And given the look of the film, it comes across as like a movie version of one of those Socom games I played on the PSP. Just looks brilliantly directed. So I'd highly recommend this. What I'm not going to recommend is number six, A Thousand Words, where fast-talking agent Jack who's in Eddie Murphy, who's in Sir Patter, is his chief weapon. But it irritates his assistant Aaron, Clark Duke, threatens his marriage to Caroline, Kerry Washington, and gets him in trouble representing guru stroke author Dr. Singer, Cliff Curtis. Jack suffers karmic repercussions from Singer's magical Bodhi tree, which sheds one leaf for each word Jack speaks. After 1,000 words, Jack will die. Now, maybe this limp comedy will work on kids who haven't suffered Eddie Murphy's worst films ever released, but someone who knows that the best of his work stopped coming out once the 80s had ended, this is, you know, really one to avoid. Number 7, we have Safe House, where Matt Weston, Ryan Reynolds, is a CIA rookie who is manning a safe house in Cape Town, South Africa, when Tobin Frost, Denzel Washington, the CIA's most wanted rogue agent, is captured and taken to the safe house. During Frost's interrogation, the safe house is overtaken by mercenaries who want Frost. Weston and Frost escape and must stay out of the gunman's sight until he can get to another safe house. Now, I brought you a review of this a couple of weeks ago, and the film is fine for a while, but it kind of fell apart after that. But if you want to hear the review in full, just go to dvdfever.co.uk, click on podcasts, and check out show number 30. Number 8, we have Journey to the Mysterious Island, where Sean Anderson accompanies his new stepfather Hank to find grandfather Alexander, who went missing while exploring a lost island. With the help of Gabato and Kehlani, they reach the island and find Alexander. After a few harrowing encounters, they escape from the island on the submarine Nautilus, returning home. Now, starring Dwayne Johnson, Vanessa Hudgens and Michael Caine, it's definitely a film for, you know, kids and maybe older blokes who want to see Vanessa Hudgens. Sorry, absolutely miles away. What was I thinking? Anyway, number 9, we have Casa di Mapadre, which took $2.29 million in its first week, and I thought it sounded like a foreign film that finally, you know, got a bit of an audience in America, but it's not. Armando Alvarez, and this is where it goes downhill, played by Will Ferrell, has lived and worked on his father's ranch in Mexico his entire life. As the ranch encounters financial difficulties, Armando's younger brother Raul, Diego Luna, shows up with his new fiancée, Sonia, Genesis Rodriguez. It seems that Raul's success as an international businessman means the ranch's troubles are over, as he pledges to settle all debts his father has incurred. But when Armando falls for Sonia, and Raul's business dealings turn out to be less than legit, all hell breaks loose as they find themselves in a war with Mexico's most feared drug lord, the mighty Onza, played by Gael Garcia Bernal. Now, the trailer makes it look like a spoof of most of Robert Rodriguez's films with Antonio Banderas, which are all a bit daft in the first place. So this is basically a one-joke movie, which, thanks to Will Ferrell, doesn't look at all funny. No wonder it's absolutely bombed in its first week. Number 10, we've got This Means War, where two top CIA operatives wage an epic battle against one after another as they discover they are dating the same woman. And starring Tom Hardy and Chris Pine, both fancying Reese Witherspoon, the trailer just looks dreadful. Now, I've said this before, I mean, Tom Hardy, you know, he's a decent actor when he wants to be. I didn't go a bundle for Bronson on the whole, but, I mean, you could at least see him putting the effort in. And he was good in Inception as well. But Chris Pine, I mean, I saw him in Star Trek. That's all I can remember him from. And he was just, he's not Kirk. He really isn't. Reese Witherspoon, God, she just redefines vapid. I can't imagine one man fancying her, never mind two. And of course, it happens to be the two men who work together, and it's predictable as anything else, you know, just give it a miss. Anyway, we'll have a bit of music, and then we're going to have the new cinema releases out this Friday. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show with me, Don Robinson. And in this section, we'll be having a look at the new cinema releases out this Friday, starting with Wrath of the Titans. Now, a decade after his heroic defeat of the monstrous Kraken, Perseus, the demigod son of Zeus, is attempting to live a quieter life as a village fisherman and the sole parent to his 10-year-old son Helios. Meanwhile, a struggle for supremacy rages between the gods and the Titans. Dangerously weakened by humanity's lack of devotion, the gods are losing control of the imprisoned Titans and also their ferocious leader, Kronos, father of the long-ruling brothers Zeus, Hades, and Poseidon. The triumvirates had overthrown their powerful father long ago, leaving him to rot in the gloomy abyss of Tartarus, a dungeon that lies deep in the cavernous underworld. Perseus cannot ignore his true calling when Hades, along with Zeus's godly son Ares, Edgar Ramirez, switch loyalty and make a deal with Kronos to capture Zeus. The Titan's strength grows stronger as Zeus's remaining godly powers are siphoned, and hell is unleashed on Earth. Enlisting the help of warrior Queen Andromeda, Rosamund Pike, Poseidon's demigod son Arginor, Toby Kebbell, and fallen god Hephaestus, I think that's how you pronounce it, Bill Nighy, Perseus, who's played by Sam Worthington, bravely embarks on a treacherous quest into the underworld to rescue Zeus, overthrow the Titans, and save mankind. Now, if you like the first one, then you'll probably like this. But I hated the first one. It was overlong, underwritten, and everyone acted like they were made of wood. Dull, dull, dull. I will not be seeing this. Next out we have Breaking Wind, which is apparently a comedic spoof based on the worldwide phenomenon of the Twilight Saga. Yeah, Breaking Dawn, Breaking Wind, yeah, blah, blah, blah. I made that joke the other week. Anyway, starring no one famous, it's very telling that this was made last year and has only ended up just now going straight to DVD in the US, released today, by the way, and somehow is getting a cinema release here this Friday. In the trailer, it's all excruciatingly unfunny, and at the end, Bella farts. Bravo! Next we have Baby Call, where single mother Anna moves in with her eight-year-old son because it's unlikely he'd have his own place. But he moves with her eight-year-old son to a big flat with a secret address outside Oslo to get away from her violent husband. Anna is scared stiff that they will be found, and is under heavy watch by a couple of childcare workers. She gets the idea of buying a baby call, basically a baby monitor device, so that her son doesn't have to sleep in her bed, only to find that the baby call picks up another troubled child somewhere in the flat. She meets shopkeeper Helga again when she complains about the baby call, and finds comfort in this shy guy which obviously has a troubled past. Anna is really on the edge, and maybe her imagination is playing with her as well. We follow Anna as she tries to hide out in her new flat, taking small steps into society, only to feel threatened by anything that shows up on her doorstep. Is she imagining that someone is hurting a child somewhere in the big flat? Starring Noomi Rapace from the original Girl with the Dragon Tattoo trilogy, which I still haven't seen, the trailer for this, it does look intriguing, so certainly does seem worth a watch. Also this week we have The Pirates in an adventure with scientists. A pirate captain, Hugh Grant, sets out on a mission to defeat his rivals Black Bellamy, Jeremy Piven, and Cut Glass Liz, Salma Hayek, for the Pirate of the Year award. The quest takes the captain and his crew from the shores of Blood Island to the foggy streets of Victorian London. This is the latest movie from Aardman Animations, who brought us Creature Comforts, Chicken Run, The Curse of the Were Rabbit, and Ed Miliband, Wallace and Gromit. And I really like the look of this. Yes, I normally hate animations, but those are ones that are in CGI, which they just seem to have no heart to them whatsoever. But Aardman always pull out the stops, pull out all the stops. And this one does look rather like a must-see, so yeah, definitely well worth a watch. As I say, all the trailers for this, just go to facebook.com/DVDFeverShow and you'll see them there. And finally out this week, we have Titanic 3D. Now, I'll give you, a premise about what it is, obviously, even though there can't be anyone who doesn't know what it is. Titanic is James Cameron's epic account of the night that the RMS Titanic went too fast on its maiden voyage and hit an iceberg, rupturing the underside of the ship's head and letting enough water in to make it sink. Sorry, I spoiled the ending for you there. Ha, ha, ha. It's one of those films that doesn't really need its plot explaining, but as I say, there can't be many people on the planet who don't know that the ship didn't quite make it to its destination, but rather took a diversion to the ocean bed. Now, this 3D conversion has been made to commemorate 100 years since the Titanic's ill-fated voyage, which set sail on April the 10th, my sister's birthday, and sank on April the 14th, which is my birthday. Which is coming up soon. Send me some birthday cards, you buggers. No, you can't. April 14th, that's my birthday, that's the date that it sank. But as I say, it's neither of our faults, so don't blame us. That said, Titanic still holds up as a fantastic film today, but Whether I'd go to the cinema again to see it, I really don't know. Perhaps if it had been made with 3D in mind, maybe, but it's just a 3D conversion in post-production, so, nah, doubt it. Yeah, that's your films out this Friday. And we're going to be having a look, well, have a bit of music first, and then we'll have a look at the DVDs and Blu-rays out this week. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show. And in this section, we'll be having a look at some Blu-rays and DVDs out this week, starting with Puss in Boots. You loved him in Shrek. Now see how the one and only swashbuckling feline found his fame and a very big pair of boots. It's a hilariously funny animated epic, it says here. Lover and fighter, an outlaw, Puss in Boots, Antonio Banderas, is off on the adventure of his nine lives as he teams up with Kitty Softpaws, Salma Hayek, and Humpty Dumpty, Zach Galifianakis, for the ultimate showdown with the notorious Jack and Jill, Billy Bob Thornton and Amy Sedaris. Here's the true story of the cat, the myth and the legend that is Puss in Boots. Now, I got a couple of laughs out of the trailer, but as anyone who's heard me before now will know how much I dislike CGI films for kids, because they just seem all so lazy, as I've said several times in this show already, I think. So I'm not going to be seeing this one. Also this week we have The Awakening, and starring Dominic West from The Wire and 300, and also John Carter. Rebecca Hall from The Town, an Oscar nominee Imelda Staunton from Vera Drake. The Awakening is a chilling new supernatural thriller from Nick Murphy. In a post-World War I England in 1921, an author and paranormal sceptic, Rebecca Hall, is invited to a countryside boarding school by the headmaster, Dominic West, to investigate rumours of an apparent haunting. But just when she thinks she has debunked the ghost theory, she has a chilling encounter which makes her question all her rational beliefs. And this is the film that's been derided in the US, and the trailer looked rather a mess, which it's a shame as it's got another otherwise good cast. Also out this week we have Happy Feet 2, and the sequel to Happy Feet is the Academy Award winning animated smash hit Happy Feet 2 returns audiences to the magnificent landscape of Antarctica. Mumble, the master of tap, has a problem because his tiny son Eric is choreophobic. Reluctant to dance, Eric runs away and encounters a mighty Sven, a penguin who can fly. Mumble has no hope of competing with his charismatic new role model, but things get worse when the world is shaken by powerful forces. Eric learns of his father's guts and grit as Mumble brings together the penguin nations and all manner of fabulous creatures, from tiny krill to giant elephant seals, to put things right. And you can tell I won't be watching this, for the obvious reasons. But if you want to see it, now it's out on DVD and Blu-ray. There's a lot of extra content on it, which includes How to Draw a Penguin, The Mighty Sven, the Happy Feet 2 sing-along. Other sing-alongs include Bridge of Life and Papa Oom Mau Mau. Isn't that... The bird is a word? I believe I've heard that the bird is a word. Can't remember where I heard that from. Running in with Boadicea, Pink's new song, The Amazing Voices of Happy Feet 2, I Tore a Puddy Tat, Happy Feet 2 movie app, and Helping Penguins and Pals. Wow. And before the break, we also have Dirk Gently Series 1 out this week. Dirk Gently, Douglas Adams' perennially broke, morally dubious holistic detective, whose investigations are based on the fundamental interconnectedness of all things, is finally brought to TV in BBC4's hit series. Created by Howard Overman, Misfits, and starring Stephen Mangan as Dirk and Darren Boyd as his put-upon business partner Bridget Macduff, these four stories take in a missing cat, a stolen robot, horoscopes that actually predict the future, and a Pentagon plot to destroy the free world. And while solving these cases, Dirk must stay one step ahead from Macduff's sceptical girlfriend Susan, Helen Baxendale, harassed Detective Inspector Jilks, Jason Watkins, and his own unpaid, unappreciated assistant Janice, Lisa Jackson, all while escaping the attentions of the taxman and framing a man for murder. Based on the much-loved books by Douglas Adams, Dirk Gently is written by Howard Overman, Jamie Matheson for Being Human, and Matt Jones, who's written for Doctor Who and Skins. Part genius, part con man, part mostly tangential, Dirk Gently is a detective note like no other, and this new release includes all three new episodes plus the pilot episode from last year. And I've not seen these three episodes, but I watched the pilot and I was massively disappointed. It's just, it's not Dirk Gently. I mean, I've not read the books, but I listened to the radio show when it was on, and it was just mad as anything, like you'd expect from Douglas Adams, but it was just so nothing. I mean, what's his name? Harry Enfield, as you know, even though I don't like his comedy anymore these days, he just seemed perfect in the role. You need an older man for the role. And Billy Boyd as Macduff, he was brilliant as Macduff. But this, it just doesn't work, you know. So give that a way big miss. Okay, so we'll have a bit of music, and then we have some more DVDs and Blu-rays out this week. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show, and this last section of the first hour, we're going to be having a look at some more DVDs and Blu-rays out this week. And we start off with The Thing. Well, not the original, but the remake. A paleontologist, Kate Lloyd, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, joins a Norwegian scientific team in Antarctica that has discovered an extraterrestrial ship buried in the ice and an organism that seems to have died in the crash. When an experiment frees the alien, a shape-shifting creature with the ability to turn itself into a perfect replica of any living being, Kate must join the crew's pilot, Carter, Joel Edgerton, to keep it from killing them off one at a time. Paranoia soon spreads like an epidemic as they're infected, one by one, and a thrilling race for survival begins, it says here. Well, this has been billed as a prelude to the original, but the trailer just copies so many scenes from the 1981 classic, so it just comes across as completely pointless. Don't bother with this. Get the excellent original instead. It's out on Blu-ray and also HD DVD if you have one of them. I think it costs like about £1 or £2 on Amazon. Other websites are available, but probably not selling any HD DVDs anymore. If you want an HD DVD player, you can get one from the same place to attach to your Xbox 360, which is what I did. And it costs about 20, 30 quid. It's probably about 20 quid now. And it's just absolute bargain. You can get tons of films dead cheap. excuse me. If you do want to watch this, there's a lot of bonus material. There's 6 deleted scenes. There's also featurettes, Start the Helicopter Now and The Thing Evolves, plus Fire and Ice. And also a feature commentary with director Matthias van Hengingen and producer Eric Newman. And finally, also this week, we have Wuthering Heights, another remake, which is the Academy Award-winning writer-director Andy Arnold's third feature, following the BAFTA Award-winning Fish Tank and Cannes Jury Prize-winning Red Road. Based on the novel by Emily Bronte and adapted for the screen by Andrea Arnold and Olivia Hetreid, Wuthering Heights stars newcomer James Howson as Heathcliff and Kaya Scodelario from Skins as Kathy, alongside Steve Effords as Joseph, Oliver Milburn as Mr. Linton, and Nicola Burley is playing Isabella Linton, and introducing Shannon Beer and Solomon Glaive playing the young Kathy and Heathcliff. A poor young English boy named Heathcliff is taken in by the wealthy Earnshaw family, where he develops an intense relationship with his younger foster sister. So it's just like Dynasty then, with John James and Emma Sams. The trailer is almost dialogue-free, and certainly interest-free, so I'm definitely going to pass on this. Other films out this week, we have 50-50, which is a brilliant film. I'll bring you a review of that soon on Blu-ray. Also have, as mentioned, The Awakening, The Big Year, Corman's World, Dancing Through the Dark, Justice, which I've got for review, so I'll bring you a review of that soon, Quest for Love, which is some dodgy 70s film with Joan Collins, but features time travel. I really did enjoy that when I saw it on TV ages ago, so that's worth a watch. Return of the Man from U.N.C.L.E. and The Yellow Sea, aka, also known as Hwangi, aka The Murderer. Various TV series out this week, we have Archer Season 2, 40-something with Hugh Laurie, Heartbeat Season 10. Now, I say TV series, but there's also some miscellaneous stuff in this. So we've also got Iron Maiden with En Vivo, and Joe Bonamassa, Beacon Theatre, live from New York. As Keeping Up with the Kardashians, Season 2. Last of the Summer Wine, Series 21 and 22, in one box set. Racing Hope, Season 1. Something Special, How Are You, Mr. Tumble? Yeah. Top Gear, The Great Adventures 5. Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea, Complete Collection. Waterloo Road Series 7, Spring Term, and Young James Herriot. And a few Blu-ray premieres, we've got Melina, Monty Python and the Holy Grail, and if you really must, Phil Collins, Live at Montreux, 2004. Okay, so that's everything for the first hour, and we're going to have Start with video games in the second hour, including the top 10 games charts, also some new releases in the top 40. But to take us to the top of the hour, we're going to have absolute classic, The Alan Parsons Project and Eye in the Sky. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show, live on Manchester's 106.6 with me, Don Robinson. And you just heard Jan Hammer, The Trial and the Search, from Escape from Television, which also is the album that brought us Crockett's theme from Miami Vice. I mean, it's a going back about 20-odd years, but it's an absolutely brilliant album. Brilliant, brilliant stuff, if you like your instrumentals. In this hour, we have, so we start off with video game stuff, starting with the top 10 games charts, some new video games releases, and some video games news. So there's a lot of good stuff in there, so keep stay tuned for that. Then we have a look at some TV stuff in the second half hour, where we have a look about some TV programmes watched in the past week. What we watched in the past week? I've completely forgotten. So let's just have a looky. Oh yes, Touch and Hit the Road, Jack. So, really good stuff, or is it worth really watching, or is it just worth giving a miss? Only one way to find out, and that's just to stay tuned to the programme. Also after that, we have a look at some new programmes coming up in the next week, plus a relatively new section, what I call Mashup Madness, featuring lots of ooh misses kind of clips from TV. But this week we've got a whole video I've done a little while ago called Carry On Deal or No Deal. So, yeah, stay tuned for that. So the top 10 video games chart, starting with obviously number 1, it's a new entry for FIFA Street. Then number 2 we have Mass Effect 3, number 3 SSX, number 4 FIFA 12, number 5 Mario Party 9, number 6 Mario & Sonic London 2012 Olympic Games, number 7 Rage, number 8 Zumba Fitness. Number 9 we've got Assassin's Creed Revelations, and number 10 Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3, which is doing damn well to still be in there well over a year after. No, not over, well, every year. I'm thinking of Call of Duty Black Ops. What am I talking about? Shut up, Dom. It's only a few months old. You know what I was saying there. Some re-entries this week. We have number 12, Twisted Metal. Number 30, Professor Layton and the Spectre's Call. And number 35, Sonic Generations. And a new entry. Well, I say new. You make of it what you will. Zumba Fitness Rush at number 37. But there's all these Zumba Fitness games anyway, so they're not really new, are they? What is new? Some games coming out this Friday, starting with the Devil May Cry HD Collection on the Xbox 360 and PS3. And this brings together the first three original Devil May Cry titles. Devil May Cry, Devil May Cry 2 and Devil May Cry 3, Dante's Awakening. Now featuring Dante, one of the most iconic video game characters of the last decade, this HD Collection will be full of the award-winning gameplay and style that the series has become known for, with the addition of stunning HD graphics, bonus content, and support for trophies and achievements. Debuting in 2001, Devil May Cry immediately redefined the action genre. The title captured gamers' hearts through its stylish over-the-top action and bad boy anti-hero Dante. Son to a human mother and devil father named Spada, the half-demon Dante uses his innate abilities and the powers of ancient demons to fight a one-man war against the forces of darkness and save humanity from damnation. Devil May Cry 2 was released in 2003 and centres on Dante and his new devilishly agile partner Lucia in their fight to defeat a man hellbent on achieving supreme power. Devil May Cry 3 Dante's Awakening Special Edition is a definitive edition of this title, featuring a number of enhancements, including the opportunity to play as Dante's twin brother Virgil, as well as the addition of a bloody palace mode. That's not me swearing, that's what it's called. And also Turbo Mode. Also out is Assassin's Creed Revelations Ottoman Edition on the Xbox 360 and PS3, which includes a full game of Assassin's Creed Revelations plus three of the downloadable contents. Starting with the first one is the Ancestors Character Pack, which is four new multiplayer characters, including the swashbuckling privateer, deadly siren corsair, the opportunistic brigand, and the bloodthirsty gladiator. The Ancestors multiplayer character DLC also includes customization items for your characters. The second one is called the Mediterranean Traveller Maps Pack, and there's six multiplayer maps, including three new locations, Jerusalem, Imperial and Dyer's, and three maps from Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, Siena, Firenze and San Donato. And it also unlocks customization items for your characters and new trophies. And the third one is called the Lost Archive, which features innovative narration style and puzzle platforming gameplay pioneered in Assassin's Creed Revelations present-day Desmond sequences. And the Lost Archive includes new single-player features, three character skins. You've got Ezio Turkish Assassin Armour, Altair Robe, and the Armour of Brutus. There's capacity upgrades for gun, crossbow, and bomb capacities. There's also one additional mission called Vlad the Impaler Prison. Some new multiplayer features. There's three characters. There's a Crusader, Ottoman Jester, and Ottoman Doctor. Now, I loved Assassin's Creed Revelations when I played it. I won't bother getting all these downloadable contents because I never really... I didn't finish the game itself. I've just sort of played it and then got a bit sidetracked. But I didn't like the original game. But by the time I got to this game, they did seem to fix a lot of the problems that were in the first game. So if you've not played it at all, then definitely, you know, get the full edition here. Also this week we have Top Gun Hard Lock on the Xbox 360 and PS3. Take an adrenaline-fueled flight into the danger zone, tailgating MiGs at Mach 2 in this explosive action-packed reboot of a legendary brand. Top Gun is a rollercoaster of a flight game with a flair of modern-day cinematic blockbuster. It's an intensely fun, action-packed arcade game, it says here. Features a substantial single-player campaign with 15 different exciting missions and two additional single-player modes. There's thrilling competitive and cooperative multiplayer modes, online for up to 16 players, and in-game for up to 4 players. There's high-quality plane physics and models, and there are 21 different planes in total, and the game includes 7 licensed planes that are playable. The hardlock mode also gives you cinematic, fast and furious all-action experience in the one-on-one dogfighting. They've also licensed some music, the Top Gun Anthem and Danger Zone. And also this week we have Star Wars Kinect, where you can feel the Force as you transform yourself into a Jedi. Fully harness the power of the Kinect platform to deliver a natural and intuitive Star Wars experience. It features the power of the Kinect places you in the Star Wars universe with no controller required, allowing you to live out the ultimate Star Wars fantasy. The stunning visuals transport you into the worlds of many of the movies, complete with the iconic characters, vehicles, ships and droids that you expect. Kinect Star Wars offers immersive Star Wars adventures for everyone. Fulfill your destiny as a Jedi, pilot iconic ships and speeder bikes, race pods, and much, much more. Share the fun with friends through co-op and cooperative modes, and with multiplayer difficulty levels playable simultaneously. Fans of all levels can enjoy the game together. Okay, so that's all the DVD releases, video game new releases out for this week. In a moment, we'll have some video game news, but first, I'll have a bit of music. Going back a fair while, this is an album track, so you may not be familiar with this, but around the time when Erasure used to be really popular, not the title track of Wild, obviously, but one of the best tracks, well, the final track, and also had an instrumental version at the start, it's called Piano Song, and that's what we have for you now. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, that was Erasure with Piano Song, and you're back with the DVD Fever Show with me, Don Robinson. And this section we have a look at some video games news, starting with the news that 2012's Replay Expo will take place in Manchester, the event organisers have announced. Yes, Britain's biggest retro gaming event enjoyed several successful years at Blackpool, but will take place at a new venue and undergo a name change for 2012. Manchester, here we come. New venue, new dates, and even new name for Replay Expo, Replay Events wrote on Twitter. Replay bills itself as a celebration of gaming history, offering hands-on opportunities in relation to virtually every gaming console ever released. Increased support from contemporary studios saw a stronger lineup of new releases at last year's show. Tournaments regularly feature at the events based around games such as Street Fighter 4, Pong, and Super Mario Kart in previous years. Replay 2012 will take place on October 13th and 14th, and full details are expected to follow. So I'll certainly bring you those once I've got them. Also check out the Facebook page for some footage of the 2010 Replay Expo. We also have the news that Angry Birds Space will appear on the Windows Phone, developer Rovio has confirmed. The Finnish studio said it's committed to bringing the best possible experience to all Angry Birds fans. We are working closely with Nokia to bring our games to their platforms, Rovio chief executive Mikhail Head said the other day. Our mutual goal is to bring the best possible experience to our fans, including all fans using Windows Phone devices. It follows earlier reports that rewriting the app for smaller platforms, such as the Windows Phone, is too great an undertaking. Rovio boss Peter Vesterbacher said, "We're the number one app in the Windows Phone App Store, but it is a big undertaking to support it, so you have to completely rewrite the application." He added, "If you look at activations, Apple's iPhone software and Android are clearly bigger than any other platform. We want to be on all screens, but we have to consider the cost of supplying the smaller platforms. With Windows Phone, it's a lot of work to technically support it." He also revealed that he expects the franchise to hit 1 billion downloads within the next few months, a figure that could rise to 2 billion on the back of Angry Birds Space and the firm's additional planned releases. Angry Birds Space is now out for iPhone, iPad, iPod Touch and Android devices, as well as Mac and PC. A retail copy for Windows, for PC itself, will follow shortly. It's also available for free, with adverts on iPhone and the Android, with an ad-free version costing 69p. It says the game features 60 interstellar levels, with regular updates planned by Rovio. Gameplay remains the same as previous Angry Birds games, but the new space setting enables players to use the gravity of nearby planets to set up shots. The blockbuster title also features 6 brand new birds, new superpowers, and a whole galaxy to explore. The original Angry Birds has received 700 million downloads across all platforms, and it was downloaded 6.5 million times on Christmas Day alone. Now, I was a massive fan of Angry Birds, and I've not played it for ages, because I got through, I think, all the levels on the original, then played some of Angry Birds Rio, and I'm not sure if I've tried another one, but do I really want to do the same again? I don't know. I've got more into Words with Friends, which is like Scrabble. I've got far more into that these days. So Angry Birds, I think I've birded enough with that for time being. We saw the news that GameStop appears to have ruled out a takeover of struggling video game retailer Game. The US retail giant said it was focusing its efforts on its online business within the UK, seemingly eliminating the possibility of any future high street presence. GameStop's Mike Mauler told investors, "Having closed all our UK stores, we are focused entirely on competing digitally in the UK." Refusing to comment directly on Game, Mauler did, however, say that GameStop will continue to evaluate the market and opportunities. GameStop has previously been linked with a buyout of Game's international operations, while Comet owners Op Capita were thought to have money in place to repay Game Group's debts and put management put a management group in place to restructure the business. Last week, the Game Group filed for administration following the firm's delisting from the London Stock Exchange, and closing its chain of GameStation stores is said to be one of the main avenues Game Group is exploring to save the retailer. The high street retailer's shares plummeted by 90% in 2011, despite a £1 billion in annual turnover. But obviously what didn't help was that they were no longer able to stock a lot of high-profile new releases because they just couldn't get the credit to do so. So it's sad. It is sad in a recession, but I think the writing was on the wall for a while. We also have the news that Max Payne 3's multiplayer cruise will transfer to Grand Theft Auto 5. In an interview with IGN, Rockstar co-founder Dan Houser revealed that Cruise, Max Payne 3's version of Clans, will carry over to multiplayer in the next Grand Theft Auto via the Rockstar Social Club. He said, "Multiplayer is an ever more important part of our games moving forward, and by creating Cruise through Social Club, the Cruise that you create in Max Payne 3 will be ready and available for you to play in Grand Theft Auto 5 from day one. It's all part of our larger approach to make multiplayer deeper and richer than what's currently available, much more easily accessible to the newcomer and rewarding for the hardcore." Max Payne 3 sees Max relocate to Sao Paulo, working security, when his family is hired to protect, becomes a target of Brazil's criminal underworld. Max Payne 3 will launch on May the 18th in Europe and May 15th in North America for Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3. A PC release will follow on June the 1st in Europe and May 29th in North America. Grand Theft Auto 5 has been rumoured for release this summer, but no official announcement has yet been made. Okay, so that's everything to do with video games for this week, and in a moment, we'll have a bit of music, and then we'll have a look at some TV programmes watched in the past week, including Touch starring Jack Bauer. Oh, I mean Kiefer Sutherland. So difficult to get the two of them mixed up. Okay, this is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever Show with me, Dom Robinson, on Manchester's 106.6. And in this section, we'll be having a look at some TV programmes watched in the past week, starting with Touch. And the first episode was called Tales of the Red Thread. And Kiefer Sutherland returns in an ambitious new drama portraying a single father who discovers that his son has a very special gift. Starring Kiefer Sutherland, David Mazouz, Gugu Mbatha-Raw, Danny Glover, Roxana Brasso and David Haig. At the age of 11, Jake tells us that everyone we'll ever meet in our lives is connected by a single red thread that can be stretched or tangled but never broken. So basically he's talking about fate. Early on we see Martin, Kiefer Sutherland, who works at the Lost and Found in JFK Airport, collecting a box of forgotten mobile phones with a view to giving them to Jake, who likes to take them apart. One rings and it's the owner who wants it back, but Martin gets a call on his own phone just as he's about to write down the owner's address, and places it down on a bag that soon gets away from him while he's distracted with the call, because it's the police who have been called out as his son has got into trouble. There they come across a man who buys a lottery ticket, which Jake snatches in order to write the numbers down. The guy gets the ticket back, but later that night, Jake gets all the phones he has to ring the same number at once, made from those lottery numbers, which in turn are actually the winning numbers. Spooky. We're told that the universe is made of precise ratios and patterns, and the series comes from the creator of Heroes, a series that wasn't really for me because I'm not particularly into superhero films and TV shows a lot of the time, but you can definitely tell that weird things were afoot. Now overall you did see how everyone sort of featured in the episode all fits together, but it just came across as massively contrived. So I'll give it another couple of episodes just to see if it improves. But we'll see. I mean, the good thing is it's showing on Sky just a few days after it's being broadcast in the US, apart from this particular pilot episode, which was on a few weeks ago. So we'll see how the next couple of episodes fare anyway. Also, we have Hit the Road, Jack, which is on Channel 4 on Tuesday nights. And in the new series, Jack Whitehall takes his show on the road, visiting a different UK city each week. Now, from the trailer, it looks like there's a series of sketches. Well, I can say there's a series of sketches mixed in too, so I was looking forward to this. But he started the show with some jokes based in Wales. So whereas the billing originally had said this episode would be set in Newcastle, they clearly must have swapped them around. Then we saw a sketch where he became a blonde Australian with long hair, pretending to coach a group of rugby players, winding them up in various ways, including getting them to make the noises of animals, and also have a seance, pretending to channel the thoughts of celebrities who aren't yet dead. Ruth Jones then popped up for a half-assed, jokey interview before we saw another sketch of Jack singing and drinking with an elderly male voice choir, which was followed up by a sketch of Jack dressed as a woman, auditioning Welsh people to become a member of the royal family, even asking one if he had a history of incest in his family. When the guy replied no, Jack asked, "Well, would you like to start a history of incest in your family?" It was better than it sounds, quite honest. But overall, the episode was very hit and miss, and was more of a hit, though. I do find Jack Whitehall very funny most of the time, but there's sort of too much going on in this programme, and it just felt a bit of a missed opportunity. What was just its usual brilliance was Four Rooms, where four of Britain's top dealers in art, antiques and collectibles wait in four separate rooms, each prepared to spend their own personal fortunes if the right item comes through their door. From memorabilia to taxidermy, and art to antiques, members of the public have come to sell their prized possessions, hoping to walk away with a fortune. But to do so, they have to work out when to sell and when to see the next dealer, because once they leave a room, the offer is off the table for good. Now, the first episode in the series featured the chair on which J.K. Rowling was sat on, the original music score for Psycho, artwork by Marlon Brando, Francis Bacon's paintbrushes, and an antique dildo. Will any of them make the owners rich? Four Rooms is presented by Anita Rani, and feisty new buyer Celia Sawyer joins original dealers Jeffrey Salmon, Andrew Lamberty, and Gordon Watson for the second series. Now, I was disappointed to learn that Emma Watson is no longer on the show, because overall it was still just as entertaining. Jeff was as mad as ever, and the new woman who just looks like a makeup is holding it together. She's a bit like Helen Mirren and Goldie Hawn in Death Becomes Her. Now, as I say, one of the items up for grabs was the chair J.K. Rowling sat on to write Harry Potter. I wouldn't buy it, but I was waiting to see which one of the weirdos was just looking to have a sniff. I wouldn't put it past them, quite honestly. Anyway, the episode as a whole, it's, the whole series, it's highly addictive stuff. It's an absolute must-see. And there are 7 more shows to watch, so, you know, keep an eye out for them all. That's every Wednesday night, Channel 4, at 8 o'clock. Okay, we'll have a bit of music, and then we'll have a look at some programmes coming up in the following week, including One Night and The Syndicate. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back with the DVD Fever show with me, Don Robinson. And this section, where we have a look at some new programmes coming up, well, in the coming week. Well, I say in the coming week, there's a couple of things which have already started, but I've not got around to seeing them yet. But first one is Titanic, which is on ITV on Sundays at 9 o'clock, which is an epic 4-part drama by Julian Fellowes, marking the 100th anniversary of the maritime disaster. Hugh, Earl of Manton, sets out on the maiden voyage of the Titanic with his wife Louisa and rebellious suffragette daughter Georgiana. Also on board is, in second class, our Irish lawyer John Batley, who works for Hugh, and his wife Muriel. The Manton servants, Barnes and Watson, have a brush with their American counterparts, while Georgiana is attracted to young American Harry Widener. Life on board is comfortable for the wealthy British and American passengers, but everything changes when their ship hits an iceberg and realisation dawns that the unsinkable Titanic is going down. It stars Linus Roach, Geraldine Somerville, and Perdita Weeks, Stephen Waddington, Toby Jones, and Maria Doyle Kennedy. Now, I say, I forgot to mention this last week, and as I say, I haven't had the chance to see the first episode as of yet. And oddly, there are no quick repeats within the week, so if you've not recorded it, and if you've not seen it and you haven't recorded it, then you'll have to check it out on ITV Player before this coming Sunday, which will be part two. I do note, however, that each episode has a Titanic apparently being sunk every time, so Julian Fellowes gets to do 4 times what James Cameron did. Also on this week, and it's on most nights this week, it's on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday and Friday at 10:35, we have One Night. So I say the first episode has been on already, but I've not seen it as of yet. Now, after Ted tells off a teenage girl for dropping litter outside his house, he starts to believe that the increasingly alarming events that surround the barbecue he's throwing to impress his boss are revenge attacks. His attempts to wrest back control only deepen the problem and end in tragedy. Each episode features the same night from a different perspective, firstly from Ted, then Rochelle, then Carol, and finally Alfie. It stars Douglas Hodge, Saskia Reeves, Neil Stuke, Kelly Bright, Billy Matthews, Don Gillet, Joshua Osi, Zach Morris, and Jessica Hines. Now, so I've not seen last night's episode at this point in time, but I really do like the look of this. It feels a shame it hasn't been promoted to the 9 o'clock slot like other dramas that are stripped across the whole week. It does feel a bit relegated at 10:35, but as I say, you know, for any episodes that you need to catch up on, I'm sure they'll all be on the BBC iPlayer. What starts tonight is a new 5-part series called The Syndicate. So it's on Tuesdays every 9 o'clock on BBC One every week. A supermarket in Leeds is threatened with closure, sending its 5 staff, Bob, Stuart, Denise, Leanne and Jamie, spiralling into an uncertain future. Assistant manager Stuart Bradley and his younger brother Jamie are forced to take matters into their own hands, with dramatic consequences. Just when it seems that things can't get any worse, the unthinkable happens. £18 million falls into their laps. Starring Matthew McNulty, Timothy Spall, Joanna Page, Matthew Lewis, Lorraine Bruce, Catherine Dow Blighton, the trailer makes it look like it could just be another typical BBC light-hearted evening drama for middle-aged women. A bit like Prisoners' Wives, but time will tell. And finally this week, we have a new second series of 2012, which is on the BBC Two Friday at 10 o'clock. As I say, it's the second series of the star-studded comedy featuring Hugh Bonneville, Jessica Hines and Olivia Colman. And the documentary cameras continue to follow the men and women responsible for delivering the London Olympic Games as they paddle increasingly hard to keep the Games on track and on budget. This time, the Algerian Olympic team threatened to boycott the Games after discovering that the Shared Belief Centre does not face Mecca. Starring Hugh Bonneville, well, as I've said, and also Amelia Bullmore, Vincent Franklin, Carl Theobald, I was a massive fan of the first series to the point where, when I recorded a piece to accompany my mashup video featuring on RudeTube last September, although that segment didn't make it to air as the programme was just packed full of mashup videos and they couldn't fit it in, I did a Q&A with the RudeTube crew in a sort of deadpan style where I put myself in the style of that played by Hugh Bonneville, who's just simply bloody amazing in this. I'm also over the moon that the second series has been instantly promoted to BBC Two rather than being shoved into nowhere on BBC Four like the first one. So this is a must-see. If you've not seen the first series and you get a chance to see it, just do, because it's just brilliant. So I'm really looking forward to this. Okay, so that's all the TV programmes to look out for in the coming week. And we'll have a bit more music. And then we're going to have the newish section, Mashup Madness, with my Carry On Deal or No Deal video. This is 106.6.
106.6.
Okay, you're back for the final section of the DVD Fever show for this week with me, Dom Robinson, on Manchester's 106.6. And it's time for Mashup Madness. Now, one thing I like to do is make mashup videos, usually made from several different TV shows and lasting around 1 or 2 minutes. And I've also had some of them featured on XFM Manchester's Breakfast Show with Tim Cocker and Jim Bob. And last September, one of them was also on Rude Tube, for which the polite title was Snookaloopy. But following on from a comment from Dennis Taylor about one of player Mark Allen's little traits, the full title became Snookaloopy, Fist Bumping in the Commentary Box. Now, there's another show that's one of my favourites, and it's just, so this particular video is just all clips from the same show. And this week, you're going to have Carry On, Deal or No Deal. This is 106.6.
22 boxes, £250,000. Just one question.
Have you had anything huge, huge, Vera?
Just one, Jefferson's.
Yeah.
That's what I call a sausage, Noel. The bigger, the better.
Do you have a favourite flavour?
Oh, just any.
It's so hard, so hard.
From the outside, you'd never know that it's pumping away inside. Mm. But I felt it, and you are revved up.
You were in halls with a nervous young man. Just when you get a really good feeling, ooh, you then get stabbed in the box.
Oh, gosh.
I mean, they are disgusting, aren't they?
Oh, they're absolutely vile.
And I love the fact that we're seeing deep into you.
Well, you always sneak a little finger in, don't you? Just touch it and go, ooh, touched it, touched it.
It started in the most disgusting way I can recall. Honeymoon. I think you're up to speed, but there's a couple of other juicy bits to come out in a while.
So please don't let me touch Jim, number three.
Am I going to have to give you a little bit of a stiff sausage?
Sausage, yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. Ooh. But you have an interesting private life.
Had a friend that had just come out and absolutely beasted me. This is it. You don't get any more off Hugo.
That is really uncomfortable, but next time, rub a bit harder.
Yeah. I brought my tissues.
Again, the tissues, I pulled my knob off. It feels like years since we had an all-red climax.
It's not actually that colour, it's just the camera that's...
Is it not that colour?
Well, it kind of is.
But it touched me.
Yeah, I'm hoping for a big red.
Get in there pumping upper and bottom.
That hurts.
Good, you're feeling a lot better now.
It's been quite a tradition that I always have my bogies checked.
How incredibly embarrassing. What are you doing with your bottom, dear?
I'll tell you what, it's coming out, so I need to hold it.
And it looks like a bit rank and a bit...
And thank goodness, the climax.
Okay, so that was Carry On, Deal or No Deal. And let me know what you think of this new section, Mashup Madness. Just go to the Facebook page, facebook.com/DVD Fever Show. For now, though, that's everything for this week. So thanks for everyone who listened. And check out all the trailer links and gaming footage also on the Facebook page. And I'll be back next week for some more movies, games and TV on the DVD Fever Show. For now, though, we're going to finish with an absolute classic song. It's Pink Floyd and Comfortably Numb. This is 106.6.
106.6.